Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score Baseball insider Bruce Levine and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haugh, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Good Saturday morning, Chicago. Welcome back inside the clubhouse right here on 670 The Score and the Odyssey app, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. I'm David Haugh, back from vacation along with Bruce Levine until 11 o'clock. Today, we are rested, we are ready, hopefully, Bruce, more ready than the White Sox were to start the second half of the season. Good morning, buddy. How you doing?
Good morning, David. Yeah, welcome back. Nice 2 weeks off from Saturdays to recharge your batteries. And the players, both on the White Sox and Cubs, had a chance to do that as well. As you said, turned out okay for the Northsiders, for the South Side of town. In another important series. They're all important from this time out, David, for the White Sox. Not a good start for Lucas Giolito, although he did get pinged to death. He got pinged all over the ballpark. They all count as hits, but nonetheless, not the result you wanted from the Chicago White Sox.
Pinged all over in the first inning, 4-0, before you could get to your seat and order a beer. I mean, goodness sakes, that was a bad start. The Sox 8-2 losers against the Guardians at Guaranteed Rate Field. Meanwhile, out in Philadelphia, the Cubs recovered from the first pitch home run by Kyle Schwarber and scored 15 runs in an offensive explosion, beating the Phillies 15-2. This is it. This is the beginning of the second half. The Sox have got to be better. It's all about expectations in the second half and wondering what yours are. 312-644-6767. And Bruce, that pertains to not only on the field and in the standings, because we know where both teams stand, but the trade deadline looms August 2nd, a week from Tuesday. What are realistic expectations for how active the Sox should be or will be? And certainly the Cubs as they begin to unload. A lot of rumors flying out there, a lot of things, whether it's Wilson Contreras and Ian Happ for the Cubs, and everything going on with the White Sox, the Juan Soto sweepstakes. Bruce, there's a lot of speculation out there.
There is a lot of speculation. And why don't we just start at the beginning? Rick Hahn talked to the media yesterday, David, and you roll us into this. Hahn talked a lot about Luis Robert's situation and his health and going on the IL until at least next Friday, and also talked about the trade speculations. Roll us in, David.
Yeah, because I think what we want the Sox to do, and I say we collectively, kind of as a media, maybe even the White Sox fan base, but I don't want to speak for everyone there. But when you see somebody like Juan Soto available, I think you want your team, your favorite team, to do what is referred to often as due diligence and to do the research. And the White Sox fans have lived through this before. They've gone through this with Manny Machado, with Bryce Harper, with trying to land the big fish and coming up maybe just short. So Rick Hahn, when he met the media, was ready for this kind of conversation, speculation, and you asked him about the history with the White Sox chasing big players and how open they might be to doing it once again.
How should I put this? I am, for the most part, going to stay away from any speculation about any specific player. I will say, historically, as long as I've been here and working for Jerry and Kenny, you know, there hasn't been a premium player that has changed teams that we haven't at least had conversation about. You know, we were probably, and this is my fault, we may have been a little too forthright or upfront during recent premium free agent pursuits that led to fans being frustrated when we didn't wind up converting on them. So I think at this point I'm going to err on the side of that White Sox stealth mode that you referred to, and if we make a deal, I'll happily explain it all, how it came together.
So that was Rick Hahn yesterday, Bruce. You were there. You asked the question. You went way back even to the Albert Bell scenario when the White Sox did get that big free agent. What did you hear from Rick Hahn in terms of, yes, he's not going to speculate, but how would you interpret exactly what his intentions might be based on the way he said it?
Well, I think he always wants to encourage people that the White Sox do want the best players. And if you remember, there were $30 million offers for Machado, for Harper, that were eventually not taken by those teams and their representatives. But at the same time, he admitted in that soundbite when I asked him that question that he doesn't want to tease White Sox fans into the idea that this is going to happen. It's going to happen now. David, you can make a case for the fact that if you get Juan Soto, you're going to be a much better offense. You're going to be more balanced. You're going to have one of the great hitters in the game for at least two more years after this before he becomes a free agent. And that in itself would help a stagnant offense or at the very least an offense that is not going at full bore most of the time be better. But is that the final piece that they need to be a championship level team? I'm not quite sure that Juan Soto makes them a champion, even though it would give you a 23-year-old guy that can help you win right now. It would certainly gut any type of farm system that you had going forward. Guys like Polas and Montgomery, your two top players in the minor leagues, they would go in a trade like that. They wouldn't get Soto without dealing those type of guys.
That's the right way to look at it and to break it down. I almost wonder if you ever get to that point, though, if you're the White Sox, because the two conversations and two questions you have to answer before you even get to the almost the baseball on-field impact conversation. Number one, how realistic is it even to expect a franchise that's never written a nine-figure contract to engage in the possibility of trading for somebody that's going to want $500 million in his next deal? Number two, you just have seen the Fangraph minor league system rankings that came out before the All-Star break. The White Sox are the second worst in baseball. When you have a Nationals organization that, according to John Heyman, is willing to take on more prospects and maybe major league ready players for Juan Soto, what makes you think the Sox even have enough ammunition to get in those kind of talks, because they don't have the depth in their farm system, maybe the quality of the prospect to lure somebody like that or to pique the interest and curiosity of the Nationals? So, Bruce, I almost wonder if it's folly just to even consider, because I don't think the White Sox financially or with minor league resources and that kind of capital have enough to get them.
David, you've gotten ahead of yourself. They're all good questions, but you've gotten ahead of yourself. Financially means that you're going to sign them to a 15-year deal. We're talking about 2 years after this year, okay, that you have control over Soto. That's enough to win a couple of world championships. If he changes your offense the way he should, being one of the top two or three players, if not the top player in the game, from a left-handed power bat. With that in mind, okay, the White Sox or whoever trades for Soto is going to have to take Patrick Corbin and a ridiculous contract that has to pay another $60 or $70 million over the next couple of years. This is a tremendous salary dump for the Washington Nationals, okay? It's going to be the $17 million that Soto makes, and it's going to be, on top of that, the Patrick Corbin money. So the players you get back are going to be really top-flight players, but if they trade them now at the deadline, it's not necessarily going to be the type of players that you might get in the offseason where it's a more well-thought-out situation. Right now, it's about a money dump, and it's about getting back some good players. The White Sox have good players. They might not be the top organization when it comes to young players in the minor leagues. They might be near the bottom, like you say, because all of their top young players are at the major league level. But they do have very good players that would interest Mike Rizzo of the Washington Nationals, who made one of the great trades for the White Sox and for himself in the Adam Eaton deal that brought Giolito and Lopez to the White Sox, along eventually with Lance Lynn, who was a part of that deal that they got for Dunning. So the White Sox rotation and pitching staff was fortified by a great trade made with Washington. They won't be shy to deal with them again. Your question's a good one. Do they have enough players that they would be interested in? The money is a separate issue, because he might be a two-and-a-half-year rental for you at this point, and that might be just what the White Sox want in the way of their championship window.
312-644-6767. How realistic is it to think that the White Sox could get Juan Soto from the Nationals? We'll talk about the Cubs' possibilities later. We got a big show today for you. We're going to talk to one of those talented White Sox players at 9:40. Gavin Sheets will join us here. Tyler Kepner, the great national baseball writer from the New York Times, at the top of the hour, 10 o'clock. Charlie Rice Manoso, because his father, Minnie, is entering the Hall of Fame this weekend. Long-awaited celebration and honor due Minnie Manoso. That happens tomorrow. We'll talk to him at 10:25. And throughout the show, we will listen to you, hear your calls and texts, like this one to the text line, Bruce. Wildly unrealistic, says 312. Another 660 weighs in about Rick Hahn's comments about the pursuit of Juan Soto and what he will or won't say. That statement was a complete slap in the face. I think he's talking about Hahn. Maybe he's talking about us. I'm not sure. But let us know what you think. And I just go back to Bruce. You're right. I just think that the next 2 years, if you are the White Sox and that's all you're going to commit to is the next 2 years of Juan Soto, and you think that that's still a possibility, that changes the dynamic, I think, because you aren't ready and probably willing to invest that $500 million that's going to take, that Scott Boras has already talked about demanding. But I do think the next 2 years, your championship window remains open. And with Juan Soto in Chicago, it would crack open even more. And I think that would be the way that you should look at this, if that is in fact realistic, because of, you know, Soto not wanting to go to a team that is automatically going to extend him.
Well, I mean, he doesn't really have any say-so at this point. He has no trade clause, I believe, in his in his deal. So from that perspective, right now, it's going to be all about what best deal Washington can get for him, because it's clear he doesn't want to play in Washington. And if you offer $500 million or close to it, to a player, and he turns it down. Unprecedented, David, 15 years, okay? Mm-hmm. 50, just think about that. I mean, people are talking about the money, but would you like to be able to project even a 23-year-old's health and viability 15 years from now? I mean, that is just incredibly asinine. And that's not to demean Soto, who's one of the great players in the game. I would love to see him playing in Chicago for either side of town. But 15 years and, people saying, oh, okay, he'll probably get $500 million, by the way, and, $35 to $40 million a year. It's like, come on, let's have some reality. Let's talk about something realistic to try to project a player and his viability even 5 years or 6 years from now. 5-year contracts used to be idiotic. Now we're talking about 15 years for a baseball player.
But you have to ask for it if you're Scott Boras, Bruce, because I'll push back a little bit. It's ridiculous that Matt Scherzer gets $43 million to pitch every fifth day. And you know what? He's worth every penny to the New York Mets because of what he gives them in the way of potential and how he opens a championship window. And 15 years ago, way back in 2007, Bruce, I don't know that we would have sat there and said, okay, they're going to pay somebody to pitch once every fifth day and pay that guy $43 million a year. So if I'm 23 and I have the most powerful agent in all of sports, I'm asking for a 15-year deal. I'm asking for
it. Look, David, you're right, but I don't mind the money. They have the money. I'm just talking about projecting it 15 years down the line. I'm all for Soto being the first $50 million player, okay? We already have a $40 million player, as you point out, with Scherzer. He can be the first $50 million player. How about a five-year deal?
Okay? How about it? Yeah.
You know? How about a five-year, $250 million deal? You think he'd be set with the, you know, making $50 million a year? He probably will be, or one of those young guys will be the first $50 million player after he said Scherzer's already making $40 million plus. But shorter-term deals are realistic to me. I'm not afraid of Jerry Reinsdorf or Tom Ricketts or, you know, Stephen Cohn in New York spending $50 million a year on a player. I just think industry-wise and realistically-wise, projecting it 15 years down the line can ruin franchises because of those type of commitments and because of the fact that teams aren't always in the competition mode. They go back into the rebuild mode or protect our asset mode, make more money mode.
Did you say asset?
Okay. I did.
Just making sure, Bruce.
With all that in mind, it hurts the game when these long-term commitments go south, okay? I will point to Joey Votto in Cincinnati and show you a player that should have been traded three or four times during a 10 or 12-year contract but has been stuck there because of a contract that's too high, and he's not the same player that he was, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. So those things can really ruin franchises and, in essence, hurt the game with the competitive balance as far as teams wanting to compete every year. Big mistakes, 15-year contracts.
Plenty of people want to weigh in. The Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com, and that's where we find Mike, who is in Glencoe. Good morning, Mike. Welcome inside the clubhouse.
Good morning, fellas. And I don't care about Juan Soto. I care about today. And I look back and think about Hawk and Hawk, what Hawk said yesterday on your show, David. And I think of his comment of TW, and we all laugh about that. We have a beautiful summer night. We have last night. We have everything on the line. We have a team we should beat. We have a great pitcher going for us, and we get bombed. Bruce, to me, that tells me that the Sox, whether it's heart, whether it's emotion, whether it's incentive, how do you come out so flat on a game like last night when ultimately you know this is it? You've got to show something, and they just bombed. Why is that? Did they have the will to win?
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the phone call. Bruce, it's a fair question. That was a disappointment last night, a big letdown.
It's not a once-a-week NFL game, okay? It's just not. Baseball's not like that. The White Sox came off of a great run here, a short run, but winning two in a row in Cleveland, then taking three out of four from Minnesota. That's what they had to do to end the first half, to even get back in the conversation. You know, so from all that, David, look, baseball's not a linear game. Even the Yankees are finding out that it's not linear anymore. I believe they only have a 2.5 game lead as far as best record in baseball over the Houston Astros now. So from all that, you know, we're not talking about a 120-win season for the Yankees right now. We're talking about a team that has a huge lead and is in great shape and is going to go to the playoffs. But from the perspective of, you know, just being linear and continuing, you know, whatever it is that you think a team's going to do, baseball's not like it. And that's
you're right.
It's the greatest game ever. It's fantastic.
I understand what you're saying. You're exactly right. But I love urgency, and I didn't see any last night. So I'm with Mike from Glencoe. Michael is on the south side. Michael, welcome inside the clubhouse.
Yeah, I was wondering, since the All-Star break was, you know, they was on fire, why not pitch their best pitcher, Cease, yesterday instead of in a rearranged pitching staff? Because he'd been on 5 days rest. You know how they've been at home. Home been like kryptonite to them. So why not start Cease instead of Giolito and go with Cueto and just all the way down the line? Why can't they do it that way? Yeah. Why do they have to start off like this? And you know you got people pitching Sunday. So why not do your best first?
Good question, Bruce.
Yeah, and Han explained that yesterday, that they wanted to give him a little bit more rest, back up Kopech as well, give him a little bit more rest. Basically, this was the way the White Sox approached it, that he was asked that, and he explained it, and it's a good question by Michael, and that's how he explained it. He wanted to give them more rest, and Kopech talked about, the innings going from 69 to 140 projected this year, maybe. They wanted to give him that extra rest and see if they can get them a whole week off. That's what they tried to do. And throwing Lucas Giolito out there wasn't exactly, wasn't a chopped liver, okay? He's a pretty good pitcher.
He is, against the Guardians as well. But as I said to Mullen yesterday, you come out, you need this series. You need to approach it with a little more urgency that I didn't see last night. And I would have liked to have seen Michael Kopech start one of your first four games of the second half because of what it means to get off to a good start. The fact that he's pushed back, I understand the logic, but I don't have to like it. Okay, how's that?
I love your passion, David.
All right, we will shift to the Cubs and look at what they have ahead for them in the second half. They scored 15 runs last night. Wilson Contreras, Ian Happ, who else is on the trade block? What do you think about their possibility of moving on without them and how good or bad they may be? Right here inside the clubhouse, 312-644-6767. Let us know what you think. Call us, text us. Bruce Levine, David Haw here until 11. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
The difficult challenges we go through make us better every single day, myself included. The players, being in the environments we're being in, we're getting put in right now. We're going to be able to handle those moments better in the long run, years to come, playing good teams, competing deep into games, extra inning games. Those are all really good things. We just got to figure out ways to win ball games, and I think we will.
That was the voice of David Ross from the Cubs in Philadelphia before the 15-2 victory last night. David Haw, Bruce Levine here inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Cubs responded well. Bruce, Seiya Suzuki, 4 hits. Ian Happ had 4 hits. Nelson Velasquez, 2 home runs. Wilson Contreras homered. Justin Steele, 5 strong innings, 89 pitches. That was a fun game for the Cubs. It was not a fun way that it started. Kyle Schwarber went deep on the first pitch he saw, but then the Cubs turned it into their own little home run derby, and that was the way you want to get off on the right foot. And this second half will be full of enough losing and long days, so last night was a welcome surprise for the Cubs to start off well.
Well, I think it's kind of predictable because when you look at Suzuki, you look at hopefully Stroman and hopefully Smiley, and you look at down the line Madrigal. You see, how injuries really impacted the Cubs the first half. I'm not saying they were a true playoff caliber team, but this is a team that should have been much more competitive with some of those contributions. It did allow some positive things to happen, David, and guys like Morel. Guys like Morel certainly were probably not on the radar unless somebody like Madrigal and some of the other infielders, Bodie, taking more time to get ready. The fact that Simmons wasn't ready. Morel has been, a bright light that was not going to appear on the scene except out of desperation. What did he do with that situation? Made himself into a major league player and one that hopefully they can count on going forward. So there's a lot of positives that come out of desperation in baseball.
And one of those positives came up this week in the draft. The first-round pick, Cade Horton, out of Oklahoma. Lot to like about that young man. We saw him star in the College World Series, and now he is in the fold. Breaking news on The Score, brought to you by Beat the Streak Podcast. Get an inside edge on how to win the $5.6 million prize every day this baseball season. Listen on Odyssey or wherever you get your podcasts. And Jim Callis, our buddy from MLB Pipeline, reports this morning that the Cubs have come to terms with Cade Horton, $4.45 million under slot, Bruce. But when you look at, they took 16 out of 20 pitchers in the draft among their picks. When you look at what they have going on and some of the things in the minor league system, you mentioned a couple of the bright spots at the major league level. Morrell, you know, you could point to Nico Horner. You could point to Velasquez homering twice last night. That's the odd paradox about this Cubs season. It's on a 100-loss pace, and yet you can identify isolated situations that give you reasons for hope and optimism moving forward. So it's an odd balance to strike watching the Cubs this year.
Correct me if I'm wrong, and I know our great baseball audience out there will, but to me, all baseball fans want these days is honesty as to where you're at. And the fact that baseball fans are tremendously more educated about team systems now than they were even 10 years ago, David, maybe even 5 years ago. The reality that baseball fans, people, you know, maybe only go to 8-10 games a year, but they know those farm systems. They know what they're capable of. They know what their slugging percentage and their OPS is in the minor leagues. They know what a guy's FIP is for a minor leaguer. So from all of that, just be honest with where a team is at. And it's pretty evident that the Cubs are in rebuild mode. It was from the very beginning. The things that threw us off was the signing of Stroman and the signing of Suzuki, showing that they did want to compete now. But with Stroman, I still can't necessarily figure Stroman signing out. But the Suzuki signing is a 27-year-old player who's already a seasoned professional player from Japan that should be a very good ball player. And after that injury, he's coming back and hitting over 400, I think, since he came back on the 4th of July.
Marcus Stroman goes today for the Cubs against Zach Wheeler. That's going to be a fun matchup. Pregame right here on the Score at 4:30 with Zach Zaidman out in Philadelphia, Bruce. And you're exactly right in terms of that transparency. Everybody kind of knows what's going on. And I think that was in the context that we heard and processed everything that Wilson Contreras said this week at the All-Star game in Los Angeles about his future. He can want to cling to the idea that he's not going to be leaving the only organization he's ever represented. He's 30 years old. He's been a Cub for 14 of those 30 years. That's hard to move forward. It's hard to mentally maybe move on. So maybe he's not ready for that yet. But we kind of sense it's coming. You kind of dread the day, the news, the headline, the breaking news. You know, here on the Score, you're going to hear Wilson Contreras getting ready to be traded. And to whom will it be? Will it be the Padres? Will it be the Astros? Who will it be? And Bruce, along with those, that idea yesterday was not lost on anybody, as you said, pointing out how much fans pay attention to the minor leagues. The Cubs activated Miguel Amaya at AA Tennessee. He went 3-for-5 with a double. He is the catcher of the future, which may be sooner rather than later.
Yeah, absolutely. And good, you know, good for the Cubs and, you know, good for, you know, Northside baseball fans. I think the reality of, you know, Rizzo, Baez, and Bryant, it took this full year, and it's going to be a full year in another week or so, that they were traded away for people to get their heads around it. I mean, and rightfully so. When you break up a tremendously competitive team that was a playoff World Series contender for 6 years in a row, it's going to be a big, huge letdown for everybody, knowing that you're taking the helium out of the balloon totally and starting over. That's, you know, people need time for that. I think it is time that Cub fans are accepting the reality of it, starting to go back to the ballpark a little bit more, understanding that there's good players coming and that you know, the future doesn't have to be 5, 6, or 7 years down the line. The White Sox did it in 4. The Cubs were there pretty much within 4 to 5 when they did it starting in 2012 with Epstein Hoyer. So it doesn't have to be a Kansas City or Detroit or Seattle type rebuild where it's over and over and over again and no no upward trending. The Cubs and White Sox can do it in a different way. They've shown they can do that.
We will debate the future of Ian Happ in one of our favorite segments, Should I Stay or Should He Go, coming up in the next hour. But when we come back, the White Sox left-handed power bat, Gavin Sheets, will join us next here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Thank you for joining us this morning on this Saturday with Bruce Levine. I'm David Haugh, Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Talking baseball until 11 o'clock, and it's time now to go to our guest hotline. Sponsored by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And that is where we find the White Sox left-handed slugger, Gavin Sheets. Good morning, Gavin. Welcome inside the clubhouse. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us. We know you got a long day ahead. Doubleheaders are fun. If you're playing, if things are going well, you hope to turn the corner today for the White Sox in the second half. How would you describe your All-Star break? How, when you came back yesterday, refreshed and revived, was everybody?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously when you're 90 games in the season, you get a four-day break. It's a nice little reset, you know. But we know what we have at stake for this next second half, and I think we're ready to make a big push going forward.
Gavin, how have the White Sox players inside that clubhouse, as we talk about, kept the white noise out of it? By that, I mean, you know, everyone's disappointed. You know, Rick Hahn talked about disappointing first half, good ending to it. Tony La Russa talked about disappointing and the fact that, you know, White Sox haven't played the ball that they've wanted to up to this point. But how have you and your teammates kept the white noise out and stay positive on a daily level of being able to go out there, feel good about yourselves?
Yeah, you know, that's the key. It's staying close in the clubhouse and not letting the outside noise get in. And, you know, I think we've done a pretty good job of that. And, you know, obviously there's a ton of noise around it. And, you know, we're not thrilled with the way the first half went either, but we are excited about how we finished up. And, you know, we understand exactly where we stand right now. And we understand that the first half doesn't decide who's in the playoffs. And, you know, going forward, we're going to give it our best shot. And, you know, we've got experience. We've got plenty of veterans that know how to do this. And we've got young guys that are ready to make a push as well. And so, you know, getting a taste of the playoffs the last 2 years, especially last year with the fans, you know, that's what we want. And while it wasn't the first half we anticipated, we're still, you know, right in the thick of things. And we understand that as much as anybody. And so, you know, we keep all the negativity out, and we're trying to do our job every day and get back in this thing and see where we stand the beginning of October.
Joined by Gavin Sheets of the White Sox here on Inside the Clubhouse and 670 The Score. Gavin, you grew up around baseball. Your father was in the majors for over a decade, and so you understand the approach, and you've watched him, you know, go to the park every day and throughout the course of a long 162-game seasons. So I want to ask you about urgency. This idea from the outside that we look at, like last night, and the White Sox have been off, and everybody wants the Sox to get off to a good start, and everybody wants that game to matter, maybe more than some of the others because of the importance of getting off to a good start. How do you balance urgency with perspective of knowing you have to stay patient and you can't get too ahead of yourself in a long season?
Yeah, you know, that's the battle. You know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. As much as it feels like a sprint, sometimes we got to remember the big picture. And, you know, we want to win as bad as anybody every game. And obviously last night wasn't the start that we were hoping to get off to. But, you know, today's game is just as important. And tomorrow's game is you know, whatever game is that day is the most important game, you know, no matter who we're playing. And that's kind of the phase we're in right now. It's, you know, whether we're playing the Twins or whether we're playing Detroit, you know, the games matter the same. And, you know, we're taking every game seriously. You know, no one is more frustrated than we are when we get beat. Obviously, last night wasn't the way we wanted to start the second half, but you know, we win the next three, and all of a sudden it's a great start. So, you know, we just stay focused on what's next, and you know, put last night behind us, and go out today and have a chance to win two big games, and go into tomorrow to win the series.
Gavin Sheets, our guest on Inside the Clubhouse. He's David. I'm Bruce. We're here with you 52 weeks out of the year talking baseball from 9 to 11 on The Score. And, Gavin, we talk about the leaders on the team. We talk about where the juice comes from. I'd rather hear it from you and your teammates. Who are the leaders on the team? La Russa and managers are prone to say, hey, we have 25 leaders, 26 leaders every day. They all are part of our leadership group. But where does the juice come from for the Chicago White Sox, in your opinion?
You know, obviously it starts with Abreu. And, you know, while he's not a vocal leader, it's the way he goes about his business. You know, for myself, and I know Vaughn would say the same thing for us young guys, you know, watching him is he sets the tone, he sets the expectations, and you see what it takes to be a big leaguer at the highest level that he plays at. And, you know, obviously you got guys like Lance Lynn and T.A. who same way, Grandal, and, you know, it's those are the guys that you stand back and watch the way they go about their business. And, you know, it's great to see those guys, the way they handle their business, the way they do their stuff, and it shows, you know, why they've had such a successful career. And, you know, that's what we know it takes. As young guys seeing the way that they go about their business, that's what we take from them. And, you know, that's going forward, it's the guys that we kind of fall behind and rely on, and then obviously everybody fills in behind. But, you know, you just see the way that they go about their business day in and day out, and really makes you respect, obviously, the talent they have, but the work ethic it takes.
Gavin, how did going down to Charlotte change the course of your season? It looks as if you returned a little more confident, certainly a little more productive. But when you went down in June, I imagine that had to be a disappointment. So how did that news affect what happened after that and how you responded?
Yeah, you know, obviously I didn't get off to the start that I wanted to this year. And, you know, I didn't need anybody to tell me that. And, you know, it was frustrating for myself. But, you know, I used that time as kind of a, you know, not only a physical reset, but a mental reset. You know, obviously I was really frustrated with the way things were going. The confidence wasn't there. And went back to Charlotte and had a little bit of a mental reset, kind of removed some of the doubt in my mind with the way I was playing and kind of made a slight mechanical change. But, you know, I think it was just getting that confidence back, having some success and coming back can bring the confidence back to the plate in the big leagues. And, you know, I think, well, at the time it was tough to get sent down. I think it was really the best thing for me. And, you know, luckily it was a very short stint. You know, I hated the way that, you know, some guys had to get hurt to get called back up. But, you know, it's about making the most of it and coming back and keeping that confidence at the plate.
Gavin, what's your take on the pushback from time to time on Tony La Russa? Do you guys take any of that to heart in the clubhouse? Tony's always been first to say, I'll take the blame for this loss if it's a bad loss. And a lot of fandom out there just do not believe Tony is the right guy for this team. Any of that permeate into the clubhouse? I mean, how do you look at Tony and the leadership he provides you guys?
You know, it's part of that white noise. You know, it's obviously tough to hear. You hear the chants. You can't avoid the chants at the games. And, you know, it's just it's part of, you know, not meeting expectations. And, you know, it's the way that the fans want to take it out on us and Tony, and you know, we're fully behind Tony. You know, he's our manager, he's our leader. You know, got us to the playoffs last year, and you know, I think if we turn this thing around, it obviously changes the narrative completely. And so, you know, we're all behind him, and you know, I think that it's just part of a frustrated fan base. You know, as much as we're frustrated too, the fans deserve to be frustrated, and you know, it's the best thing about Chicago is the fan base, is how passionate they are, and you know, it's part of it. So I think if we turn this thing around like we expect to, I think that, you know, it changes the narrative.
Gavin, the great thing about being a 26-year-old left-handed power hitter is that you have a bright future. The maybe downside of that only is that this time of year, when you talk about trade speculation, I imagine every conversation that Rickon has, they want to know how available is the 26-year-old left-handed power hitter because of your future. How much of that do you have to block out? I wonder if having a father who went through the same types of things year after year helps you kind of prepare or deal with some of those things. Is that something that is a factor for you?
Sure. You know, obviously this time of year is a crazy time. You never know what the move's going to be. Obviously, I think that, you know, we're going to be in the market for a lot of guys and to help this team make a final push. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things that whether I'm a part of it or not a part of it, you know, I just have to do what I do and, you know, go out every day and play as hard as I can do and control what I can control. You know, everything else is up to Rick and Kenny and, you know, whatever they want to do to make this team better and whatever pieces they need to get. And if I'm a part of that, I'm a part of it. You know, but that's out of my control. And, you know, I've spoke to my dad about it, obviously, because, you know, I've never gone through this time in terms of where I could be a piece. And, you know, as he says, you know, all you can do is can go out and play the best of your ability. And, you know, you let the guys that have that control deal with it. And, so I'm just going to go out and attack today, attack tomorrow. And, at the end of the trade deadline, if I'm still here, I'd love to still be here. You know, but that's not up to me, unfortunately.
We appreciate your time, Gavin, very much, and especially your insight and being able to articulate so well about this team. Look forward to seeing you back in the clubhouse later on today. Thanks again, David, and I appreciate your time on Inside the Clubhouse today.
Anytime. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Gavin. Right, Gavin Sheets, you. White Sox outfielder, first baseman, designated hitter, left-handed power bat, Bruce, is the way to describe him best. He's didn't get off to the start that he wanted, as he alluded to, Bruce, but I really think in the second half of the season, if the White Sox have one major need offensively, as much as Tony La Russa is into handedness, they need that left-handed power bat. They need it from Yoan Moncada, they need it from Yasmani Grandal, and they need it from Gavin Sheets to stay consistent and to give them something that offensive lineup really needs.
I got the right guy. He's in San Francisco. They continue to lose this weekend. If they start dumping, I got two great guys coming back to the White Sox from the Giants, okay?
Who's
maybe
that?
We'll pick it. Let's tease it down the line.
Okay. Do you think that I was premature?
They might. One might have initial CR. The other might have JP.
Interesting. Do you think that I was premature in having Gavin Sheets included in trade conversation? Don't you think that would be one of those guys?
No, not at all. No.
Yeah.
Berger, yeah, no, I think he's a very viable. Look, I think that in their run last year, it was lost that when Sheets came back in the second half, him and Grandal, two left-handed bats, were instrumental in the games that they did win. They didn't win a ton of games in the second half, but a lot of them that they did win, those left-handed bats from Grandal and Sheets were very helpful.
I like Gavin Sheets. I think that you hear the maturity in his voice. I like his background. I hope they can find a way to keep him, and I hope he makes it hard for them to trade, because that would mean he's producing, and that means he's worth keeping. We'll continue to talk. Trade speculation. Juan Soto speculation. Does he make sense for the Cubs or the White Sox, or who does he make sense for? Tyler Kepner is a fine baseball writer for the New York Times, and he will join us next here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.